Welcome to the Everything Action Cast, the official podcast of everythingaction.com.
Hello and welcome to the Everything Action Cast podcast for the week of February 28th, 2022. I'm your host, Zach. Joining us, we have Chris.
Hello.
And we got a bunch to talk about this week, so let's dive right in. And we got a couple trailers to dive into to kick things off here. And we got the first trailer for a movie we've been hearing about for a while here, but we've been hearing about it as they like added like more and more. They just kept adding like more and more people to it. But we finally got the first trailer for Bullet Train this week. I'm assuming it might be in front of the Batman. I'm not sure. It's obviously the Batman's out if you're hearing this, but we have not seen it yet. we'll talk about that next week. But I'm assuming this Bullet Train trailer is probably in front of the Batman. But this is the latest movie from David Leitch, who brought John Wick and Deadpool 2 and Atomic Blonde. And he's teaming up with Brad Pitt this time for a kind of John Wick style action movie, although it's based on a Japanese novel, I believe. I don't know if it's a graphic novel. I think it's just a straight up novel. But basically the premise is Brad Pitt is like an assassin who gets a job to there's a briefcase on a bullet train in Japan that he has to go pick up. So he thinks it's kind of gonna be easy job, but then there's like a bunch of other assassins and other like operatives trying to get this briefcase. They're all on the same train together, it turns like this crazy like melee on this train of everyone trying to like get this briefcase and try to figure out what's going on. And there's a ton of supporting characters. So it's like Brad Pitt, but then also like Aaron Taylor Johnson and Joey King and Hiroyuki Sanada and Andrew Koji and Brian Tyree Henry and Zazie Beetz and Michael Shannon's gonna show up at some point. I think Sandra Bullock is like Brad Pitt's like handler or the one who gives them his like assignment.
Wait, who gives him assignment?
Sandra Bullock.
Ah, okay. So couldn't tell from the voice and the.
They must have done some sort of cameo trade off thing or something, because like obviously Brad Pitt is gonna be in like that Lost City movie.
Mm-hmm.
And then it must have been like, well then you gotta be in my movie, like.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I was like, oh, is that the voice? Because I just didn't read the credits. I was kind of like, figure out who the hell the giant panda is in the trailer. That's also Sandra Bullock.
But yeah, I mean, it looks fun. It looks like it's gonna have like all the David Leitch action we've come to expect from him.
Yeah, it's definitely got that visual flair, and then setting in Japan really just enhances that neon like glow patterns.
I definitely get like Smoking Aces vibes too from this too, where it's just like all like vastly different like assassins. There's like Aaron Taylor Johnson and like Brian Tyree Henry, like these like British guys, and then there's like whatever like Joey King is like, she's like some sort of like, I don't know what, she looks like a businesswoman or something, or from the 50s or something. And then like, yeah, Hiroyuki Sanada is just like straight up samurai guy. And
I can't tell if he's an assassin or he's just like the like Yakuza guy just on a train. I mean, he seemed high up for an assassin.
Mm-hmm.
But basically any movie that has like a Japanese guy with a sword, he's just in it now.
Yeah.
You need a ninja, you need a samurai, you need a businessman, he can do all that. It also feels like this movie took heavy inspiration off of that one scene in The Wolverine where they fight on a bullet train.
Yeah, probably.
They went, why don't we do the whole series like this?
But, so that's going to be July 15th this summer, so get ready for that one. And then we got a couple of trailers for some espionage thrillers. So coming to Apple TV Plus on April 1st is going to be a new show called Slow Horses that's going to bring Gary Oldman to Apple TV Plus. And it's based on a novel, also called Slow Horses, But Gary Oldman is basically playing this guy, Jackson Lamb, who is the head of Slough House, which is basically where MI5 like dumps all their agents who have done, like, basically any agent who's kind of like severely like fucked up and had like a career ending mistake ends up at the Slough House, and they basically just do like super super menial like paperwork, and it's just like they're basically trying to like bore them out of like to retire or like to like quit the MI5 because they can't fire them because they're spies, but then it's just like forced them out of the agency by like sheer boredom. But basically,
it's pretty smart because it's like otherwise you're just doing another burn notice thing.
I guess it's like burning them or like killing them or whatever. This is like, well, like we'll put you here and then like you quit on your own accord and then like just leave and don't be a spy anymore. But basically, like one of the newer people gets assigned to Slough House, like, is like he wants to like get back into like regular MI5, so then he's like really like trying to find like a case to work on, and then this like kidnapping comes up, and then so he's like basically like gets kind of drags everyone in Slough House into this kidnapping case, but then there might be some like cover ups with like one of the higher ups in MI5 who's played by Chris Scott Thomas. So yeah, like. Spy conspiracy stuff, cover-ups, like typical, like, you know, your typical spy thriller stuff. And then also Jonathan Pryce and Olivia Cooke co-star. It's gonna be 6 episodes, and all the episodes are gonna be directed by James Haas, who directed he directed some Black Mirror, some Raised by Wolves, Alienist, Snowpiercer, so a lot of like recent shows. And then Graham Yost, who's also the executive producer on Justified and The Americans, is also executive producing this show. So hopefully maybe they'll have like that Americans vibe.
For 6 episodes, I wonder if they're doing that. I don't know how many books is based on, or is this like they're doing a full book?
I think it's just one book. Yeah.
Okay.
And I think a lot of Apple TV Plus shows go like the full hour, so I'm sure it's gonna be like it's probably like 6 full hours of episode. So basically like a 6-hour movie or something, or because I don't.
That's good if you're into it, you know. Like I feel that because it's on this, they don't have to format it where there's commercial breaks or anything. You know, it's just straight up. Here's just like a movie, but broken into 6 chunks.
So April 1st, I think they're gonna do like just episode a week, because I think it's how Apple TV Plus releases stuff mostly, so that'll go all through like April on that streaming service. And then over on Prime Video, they also have a kind of like a based on a novel spy thriller coming. So All the Old Knives is starring Chris Pine and Thandi Newton. And it's also based on a book, also All the Old Knives by Olin Steinhauer. And the premise of this one is that Chris Pine is a CIA agent who basically gets there was a kind of terrorist attack, like hostage situation went bad like years ago when he was assigned to like the Vienna CIA station. And then Lawrence Fishburne is like his like supervising officer, or like higher up in the CIA, and basically like tasks Chris Pine to like they think there was a mole helping the terrorists back then, so he wants Chris Pine to head back to Vienna and like figure out if there was a mole and who the mole is. And then it seems like all the signs possibly are pointing to like Thandi Newton being the like mole or main suspect. But they were. But
I feel like it was kind of obvious, right?
Yeah. But they were also like involved with each other romantically, so that it's like this like super complicated like, like, we were together and now like I have to like investigate you, and like if you're a mole, like what do I have to kill you if you're the mole, like. And then also, and then Jonathan Pryce is there again. So like, yeah, it's like any kind of spy thing, Jonathan Pryce needs to show up. Basically, it seems like. And Yeah, and this is a movie, so it's not a show. It's just gonna be a prime original movie. It's directed by Yannis Metz, who directed an episode of True Detective in season one, and also directed the Borg versus McEnroe tennis movie and a couple other things. And it's gonna be April 8th on Prime Video, and also like select theaters, but mostly Prime Video. It's gonna be a crazy April for Chris Pine. Like literally, like the week before this movie comes out, Chris Pine is in another movie that is, I mean, definitely more action, a more action oriented spy or like espionage movie, like where he's like, but he's more like a Black Ops movie, where like the contractor, where he's gonna be like, he's like a soldier who gets like discharged, but then he like has to, like, become like a mercenary basically, like support his family, but then like mission goes bad and he's like on the run basically. He's like, it's like a Bourne style. It's got Kiefer Sutherland's the bad guy, that one. So
that one is a blame, like kind of like, you know who the bad guy is, you know everything's laid on the table, survival. This one is more a spy thrill in the sense of just figuring out who the hell the like other spy is.
Yeah the contractor. Yeah. Contractor seems more like, probably because like Kiefer's in it, but like it seems more like 24 or something, or like Bourne. And then this one seems more like Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy or something, or like The Americans, where it's like much more of a drama. Like there might be some kind of thriller elements to it, but like mostly like a serious drama with like spy elements into it. So, but yeah, if you're a fan of Chris Pine, like April is gonna be your month because he's in back to back movies at the beginning of April. So that's it for shows this week. So I jump into some other stuff, and we got some good news about the Futurama reboot. So the Bender Gate is over. John DiMaggio is gonna be back. They have closed the deal. They've worked everything out. So he is gonna be back as Bender and all the other characters he voices.
I'm wondering what happened exactly. Was it the pay or was it what? Like,
he had a statement of like where it's like, did, like he thought they were like they were getting paid like for like the amount of recognition that Futurama has now, and like the they're basically paid like not like too little for like the like kind of like. Like how big a deal Futurama is.
He's got a point where it's like he should definitely get paid to match, but then it's like it was weird that he was the only holdout.
Yeah.
I mean, that's good. That's fine. That means we don't need some weird Bender thing where like, what happened to Bender? Oh, he died or whatever. And now it's like, you know, you get OG Bender.
Well, they said they were gonna like recast him if he didn't like come back, but yeah, and he mentioned like he didn't just think he deserved more money. He thought like the entire cast deserved more money than they were getting. So maybe I don't know if they worked out. Because like the details of the like of his deal coming back are not like out there, but hopefully maybe like if they paid him whatever he thought was like appropriate, then they like get the rest of the cast maybe more money too or something. Although it is weird, like the rest of the cast was like, eh, it's fine.
That's the only thing about it. I'm just like. I know, you know, the voice actors need to get their fair share, but my thing was like, what is why was it just Joe DiMaggio? Because I mean, Joe DiMaggio, because you know, he's done other projects, so I know where it's like he's pretty up there for in demand. It's just bizarre that everyone else is like, you know, Billy Weiss has been around too. He's actually like, he's like half the cast.
Everyone is like long time. They're like, they're all like super long time voice acting veterans.
Yeah.
Phil Lamar, Chris McNeil, Maurice LaMarche. Yeah. Like they're all like.
That's why it's bizarre. Where it's like, why? So it's like, I don't understand how they even said like, oh, we're paying you like less than the normal rate. And it's just like, no, like I get that. But then It's also like, if he's just demanding more money, and then it's like, well, why? It's just, I mean, I get why, you know, everyone wants more money, but then there's that whole, does he think he's like the main star? He wants top billed? Like,
or maybe just maybe because like now like Disney is like backing them, so maybe he just like maybe he thought like Disney was cheaping out on them or something.
I can see it. It's weird because I get it. Like, I like the project,
Disney,
but
Disney Disney can afford to pay them more. Like,
yeah, I mean, they all deserve like a increase compared to when they started and the original contract was, you know, whatever. And then when they did that short stunt in Comedy Central, and I imagine it was probably the same rate. And now it's like, okay, then they gave him a quick bump again. And I guess he was just like, no, I want more. But I don't know. It just seems really bizarre that everyone else agreed. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it just seemed like he was the only holdout. Still is a mystery to me of just the negotiation process that broke down for him.
Yeah.
Maybe he just has a shitty agent that just did not know how to negotiate.
Yeah. But yes, everyone's back now. And now the only question is, how are they gonna continue the story of Futurama? Because like, we talked about when it first got announced and everything, but like that, like the series finale. The second or third series finale of Futurama that they've had was like perfect and like just made like it made the show like this like great like it's like it made a, like this like infinite loop of like, you know, it's just kind of like always it's a closed circle, everything is all worked out, like it's so it's just like, how are they gonna like jam like new stories into that now, like. That's what I'm wondering now. Is like, how are they gonna like?
Maybe it's another loop, and then it broke the cycle eventually, or
yeah,
you know, maybe it's part of the circuit where it's like now it's the second loop, but now there's like subtle differences.
Oh, they redo episodes, but they're like now they're different or something.
Yeah, yeah.
That'd be
maybe they're aware of it this time. Like eventually, the loop grows conscious.
I don't know. We'll have to see. I think it's next year is when they're planning on that hitting Hulu. So we got plenty of time to find out what's going on with that. But I'm sure now that everyone's back, I'm sure they'll probably start recording recording stuff soon or like get. But I don't know if the episodes are written yet. I'm sure they have to write the episodes and then get everything going. But yeah. Sometime next year is when this is going to 20 episodes, new episodes of Futurama next year on Hulu. So we also got some news about the Twisted Metal show that we've been hearing about for a while. So this was announced, I think, a couple years ago. Anthony Mackie is starring in it as John Doe, who is basically like a post-apocalyptic like delivery man who like has to like drive across the wasteland to deliver this like, mysterious package, and basically on his like journey he has to like fight like all of the basically like a bunch of the like Twisted Metal characters like Sweet Tooth and whoever else shows up.
It's weird. I mean, I get they're doing kind of making this realistic, but it's far from the game.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not going to be like the like tournament like that the games were. It's gonna be like more of like a, it sounds more like a Mad Max like they're like seems like they're like heavily inspired by like Fury Road or something, where it's gonna be like this like apocalyptic like road trip kind of thing.
Yeah, that's why I'm like, yeah, I don't want to compare it to Mad Max, but it's becoming Mad Max.
But yeah, the main news this week was that it's going to be a Peacock show now. Peacock picked it up. It's going to be some Peacock original. And still no release date. I think they got Anthony Mackie starring. It's going to be um And it's also apparently they're saying it's gonna be more like it's gonna have a comedic vibe to it. It's gonna be like a half hour. It's basically like a half hour like action comedy kind of show. Like one of the executive producers behind Cobra Kai is like as show running the show, and like Will Arnett is like also like producing it apparently. Like one of the producers on it, and then Rhett Reese and Paul Wernick, who wrote like Zombieland and Deadpool, are gonna be like are also like working on the show. So it could be like this kind of like it could be like meta or like self aware or like. If that's kind of vibe, so.
I'm not sure how to feel about that, where it's meta, but then it's like it kind of throws out any of the twisted metal things that you've come to enjoy, like depending what era you came into it. Like, I like Twisted Metal Black. That was like
the
funner stories.
Yeah, that Twisted Metal Black has like definitely had like the strongest stories of the whole series.
Like, they were all kind of like Twilight Zone-esque endings of just, you know, you shouldn't have wished for this vibe.
Yeah,
like you're actually like kind of all terrible, but you know, here's your terrible fate prize thing. And now it's now they're basically just throwing away any of those things, and the world just sucks and you're just trying to deliver packages. It kind of reminds me more like Death Stranding almost, except in cars.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously, like, in, like, their, like, in the press releases for the show, they've obviously mentioned, like, Sweet Tooth. We're definitely going to get Sweet Tooth at some point in the show. Then they haven't really mentioned anyone who else might show up. I'm sure there'll probably be other, like, I don't know if it's going to be, maybe every episode they face, like, a new Twisted Metal character or something, or if, like, Sweet Tooth is chasing them the entire season or something. He's like the like recurring. It's just like they keep like having to like get away from Sweet Tooth. I'd like to see like throw some of the crazier characters in, like throw like Axel in there or something, or what was it Mr. Slam or like the forklift one or like the crane like the construction one? The special moves like it was like you like picked you up and slammed you.
I haven't really played Twisted Metal in a long time, let alone I don't remember half the other wacky guys.
Get Mr. Grimm, get him in there.
Mr. Grimm, I understood. He was just like a Ghost Rider, but I think his helmet was like a skull.
Well, Twisted Metal Black, he was like, he was in Vietnam and then he like ate his friend or something.
Yeah, his helmet is like his friend.
Yeah. Which, yeah, it definitely sounds like they're not going to go, like, that dark for this show. This like definitely seems like they're going for, like, a lighter tone for this show.
Yeah, but it kind of gets kind of generic when you throw away the things that make Twisted Metal, because the set piece alone is, like, a character. It's the post-apocalypse of the future, but people still want their Amazon.
Yeah.
So... I feel like it's a high concept, but it doesn't need to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess we'll find out when this hits Peacock, whenever that is. We don't know when this is coming out, but it's definitely one step closer to actually being a thing. And actually, speaking of the post-apocalypse and Mad Max, we got some news about the upcoming Fury Road prequel movie, the Furiosa movie. And so Chris Hemsworth is going to be the main villain of Furiosa. And facing off against Anya Taylor-Joy is going to be the young Furiosa. Which I wonder if Chris Hemsworth is going to be like just him, or they're going to like make him like one like a crazy like Morton Joe style like Lord Humongous
it can't just be this pretty guy who got to here. Like, it has to be some sort of gimmick to him where like he's got robotic feet or something.
They gotta do something crazy with him. Like
well, I'm saying, because Chris Hemsworth is just like, he just looks like a natural good guy. So the fact that he's playing a bad guy, I want him to get kind of crazy with it.
Yeah.
And then
I think the only time I can think of him being a bad guy, at least recently, was like
Bad Times at the
El Royale. Yeah.
El Royale, yeah. And that was just, he was playing basically a Marilyn Manson-esque character.
Charles Manson, yeah.
Yeah, that's it. Sorry. Charles S. Manson. And he was good in it. I just didn't mind him. Supposed to be this charming cult leader guy. And I don't want him to play that role again. I need him to be kind of like menacing in a physical way. That'd be kind of cool.
And all the Mad Max villains have been like just like crazy characters. Like, I mean, like Morton Joe and like what was like? Well, I guess like the very first villain was not too crazy. He was just like a dude.
Yeah, the first movies, Road Warrior was.
Well, it was Mad Max, and then Mad Max 2, The Road Warrior, and then Thunderdome, and then Fury Road.
Okay, so, yeah, the first movie, just regular vanilla Mad Max, was just, angry Australian bikers in goth makeup?
Yeah, because it was
pre-apocalypse.
Pre-apocalypse, it was like dystopian, but it had like collapsed and just like into like total anarchy, like the rest of the series. Like Max was still like a cop, like it was still like there's still police, order. Toe Cutter, who was also played by Hugh Keyes-Byrne, who was also Martin Joe. So he was like he was Toe Cutter in the first movie, then Martin Joe in like Fury Road.
That was a cool nod.
But you had like Lord Humongous in Road Warrior. You had like all the crazy characters in Thunderdome.
You had like jack dudes for such a place where there's not enough water and like food, you know, it's weird.
Yeah. Yeah, hopefully they come up with some sort of, like, crazy, like, character for Chris Hemsworth, and he's not just, like, Chris Hemsworth with, like, an eye patch or something, or, like, a goatee.
The most minimalist thing to just make him an evil person.
Yeah. And that Furiosa is going to be out on May 24th, 2024, so that's quite a ways off, so... I think they're gonna start shooting it next year in Australia or something, or where like in New Zealand, wherever they shot it, wherever they're shooting, wherever they can get away with like blowing up stuff.
By Australia.
Yeah.
Oh, makes sense. Doesn't it take place in Australia?
I believe so. Yeah. Oh, I can't remember. I thought they shot Fury Road in like somewhere in like Africa. I thought maybe just to get like that like desert settings.
They kind of blend together, those places in the desert. I'm not good enough to know my geography to know, oh no, that mountain's all in Africa.
Yeah.
There's like rock canyon formation.
Oh they went to, they were in like Namibia and stuff, and like Cape Town, so they were like all over Africa for Fury Road. But so moving on to some other news, we got some more casting news for Kraven the Hunter. They're like really ramping up that casting and that production. So I think last week you talked about they had cast Chameleon for Kraven, and now we found out that they have cast Calypso. So Ariana DeBose, who was in West Side Story, she's nominated for Best Supporting Actress. Is going to be playing Calypso, which I wonder if they're gonna do like comic Calypso, where she's like a like evil voodoo priestess, or if they're gonna do like the like animated series where it's like which I think the animated series is the only one that had like kind of like a non villainous Calypso, where she was like Dr. Crawford, and then Kraven just called her Calypso. She wasn't actually like Calypso, like the crazy like evil like voodoo priestess who like because in the comics it's like she took control of like Lizard and like drove she was part of the reason like Kraven went crazy because she was edging him on and being like you gotta kill Spider-Man I'll give you like I'm gonna use my magic to help you like
yeah that's what I'm saying. In the comics she was legit like a witch
yeah
but in here I don't know what they're gonna do where she's just like this normal woman who then like finds Calypso statue and becomes basically just like enchantress
yeah. Yeah, because the Amy series, I think it's because the Amy series are just like, well, we can't have like a, we can't have like a voodoo priestess or like that must have been, I'm sure that was some sort of like Fox, like we can't have this like, we can't have like this black magic character like.
It's a bad look right now. Having this like zonked out voodoo witchery to kids when there's like. I can explain that. It's just like, nope, we're not getting to that. It's the same thing when they did vampires and like Morpheus only took plasm or whatever.
Yeah, with his hands, which that's even creepier than him just like biting people. Just like him like his like weird mouth suckers, just like sucking plasma out of people with his hands. Like that's even creepier. Like they try to like censor it. It's like it makes it even worse. But I guess we'll find out how they're gonna use Calypso. But yeah, just another big Kraven character gets added to the Kraven movie. So hopefully we find out more and see what the hell this movie is gonna be. It's coming out next year, next January. So get ready for that one. And also this week, speaking of Marvel stuff, you probably had noticed on Netflix that all the Netflix Marvel shows left early this week. So on Monday was the last day of this week that they were going to be on Netflix, and they're now all gone from Netflix. But they are coming to Disney Plus. So Daredevil, Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, Punisher. Also like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Defenders, all those shows are coming to Disney Plus on March 16th. So a couple weeks from now, they'll be on March 16th. And to kind of like counteract the, the TVMA stuff, because Disney Plus doesn't have anything close to like Punisher or something on it right now. But they're going to implement a parental control, like some new like parental controls on March 16th, along with these like when these shows debut. So like, so your parents can be like, no, you can't watch Punisher. Like,
I mean, that's fine. There should be some kid controls. No kid should just wander in the Punisher show.
Yeah. So you can basically you can set a pin and then you can basically like set the like TV rating so like all the Netflix shows are rated TVMA so you can set it to be like TV-14 or lower so then you have to put a pin in to be able to watch the Netflix shows if you want if you're a parent you don't want your kid to like watch those shows that you can do that it's good apparently it's gonna like prompt you like on the 16th, or whenever you sign in for the first time after the 16th, it's gonna ask you like, do you want to allow mature content or not? And you just say yes, and then you'll be able to watch whatever you want, basically. But yeah, hopefully this means maybe we'll get more, more mature stuff on Disney Plus. Maybe Logan will show up, or like the Deadpool movies, or if they had this like parental, like ratings like parental controls now maybe we'll get like some more like stuff that like they would like they weren't gonna put on Disney Plus before but now they will because they can like control it or have parents control it now because they've been sending like most like anything that was like all any like Fox movie that was like rated R, they were like sending it to Hulu. That was like where their like kind of solution for right now for what they were doing. It's like, oh, this is like we can't this can't be on Disney Plus. It's gotta be like it's rated R. We'll put it on Hulu. But yeah, maybe this is the start of like them like allowing like R-rated TVMA stuff. And also seems like it seems like definitely indicates more of a, like a, like possibly more of these characters are gonna show up in the MCU, because I mean obviously we have Daredevil's back, Kingpin's back, maybe some of the other characters are gonna come back and be like properly into the MCU.
That'd be good.
If they're all under the same umbrella now.
I wonder if they're going to figure out how to like merge all these things correctly, besides doing spin-off things.
Well, I mean, technically they're in the MCU, I guess. They're just like we're like barely mentioned it, and then the movies didn't acknowledge it, but now. Like now, like characters are showing up for them. Like I don't know.
Right, but then how are we gonna explain just this blank chapter and everything? And we're just gonna do a time skip or something?
They all got blipped.
Yeah, just is that the easiest way to explain things?
Probably. But if you missed any of those, or you want to catch up on any of those shows, or yeah, watch them again. They're going to be on Disney Plus on March 16th, so. And, so last bit of news for this week is, we got some news that Steven Spielberg wants to direct a new Bullet, the Steve McQueen classic, although it's not going to be a remake. It's going to be, he wants to make a new movie featuring the character Frank Bullitt. But like a new story. It's not going to be a direct remake of Bullet. But apparently that's one of his like next movies he wants to work on. He still has to work out a deal with like the Steve McQueen estate, because he has to like get approval from them to like be able to use the character, because I guess they own the character and the movie rights. So apparently they're still working on that. He's going to direct another movie. In the meantime, but apparently if he works everything out with the Steve McQueen estate, then this will be like his next movie after he's directing a movie right now called The Fablemans, which is like kind of like semi-autobiographical. It's like basically like it's based kind of like based on his like childhood growing up in Arizona. But I guess if he works everything out, like this like new Bullet movie will be like next movie after that movie.
Did you watch the original Bullet?
Yeah. It's cool. It's a cool 70s cop movie. Like, and obviously that car chase is like one of the greatest car chases of all time. Like, it's insane.
I think I've just watched the car chase. I've not watched anything else.
Yeah, it's mostly just, you know, it's mostly just Steve McQueen being awesome and It's in like that like French Connection, like that's, you know, like that 70s like cop vein. It's like we gotta stop this like crazy this psycho killer from but yeah, I would hope like whatever this new like Bullet movie is, hopefully like definitely make it like a period movie, like just like don't be like it's Bullet in the modern day, like definitely make it like a 70s like a throwback 70s movie, which I think Spielberg could definitely like really do a lot of stuff with like the 70s setting and stuff. It's like 70s San Francisco. And then just try to like, I don't know if you can top the car chase, but like obviously you definitely need some sort of like big like car chase set piece. Like that's what everyone knows about Bullet. And Spielberg's done like a bunch of like he's obviously done great car chases in the past, like Raiders and other movies have had great car chases. So I'm sure he could probably do something to like pay tribute or like live up to like the bullet car chase if he made a new one. I'm trying to remember. I don't know if Bullet is actually like. I don't know if it's like based on the like books or anything. I think it was just like a like just like here's this like this like we just made up this like cool cop character. It's like I don't think it was actually like based on like a novel or anything. It was just like here's
I assume it was based on something.
Yeah, because everything's based on something, but.
And it's just like, this is what it's like being a cop in San Francisco back then, when San Francisco was like a gritty place, and now it's not.
It was based on a novel, so.
Ah.
I'm not sure if it was like a series, although I'm not sure if there's like a bunch of like Frank Bullitt stories. Like,
well, in the 70s, they just made novels like that. That was just, you know, here's a story about a cop. It's like, oh, he's like a one-dimensional cop. And that sold like. Was New York Times bestsellers popular back then? I feel like it wasn't.
I think, yeah, probably, yeah.
So there's like, oh, this sold a lot of copies. Let's make a movie on it.
Mm-hmm.
And plus, it's hard to think another version of Bullet when you just think Steve McQueen is Bullet.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the other question too. Like, who the hell do you cast as like the new Bullet? Like. But yeah, I guess if Spielberg works, if he gets all these like rights worked out, I guess we'll find out if it actually becomes a thing. We'll find out who the new Bullet is and what's going on with it. But it's in the works right now. Like Spielberg's trying to like get like trying to do something new with Bullet. But if you haven't seen Bullet, yeah, definitely check that out because like yeah, it's definitely one of the coolest movies. I'm not sure. I wonder if it's on like HBO Max or something. I just find out where it's streaming. Oh yeah, it's on HBO Max if you want to check it out. I'm sure it's probably in like the TCM section. So, but yeah, that's it for news this week. So why don't you jump into show and tell? And Chris, what have you been watching over the last week or so here?
So I just finally caught The King's Man.
Yep. Speaking of HBO Max, it's on there and Hulu.
So The King's Man was pretty good, and mm-hmm. like you're right, it was structured just like a pilot.
It's very like episodic. Like it's like there's like distinct like that's the end of this chapter. Like.
Yeah, I feel like though I didn't think the time would be this long. Like, I thought it was just certain arcs, but it really spans, like, 3 years? Three, four years? I couldn't really tell because the whole premise of the first two acts was to see how long, what's-his-face? Like, the kid, the Ralph Fiennes' character's kid goes
Conrad.
To war.
Yeah.
Conrad?
Well, because like they're involved with like they're there when like France like Archduke Ferdinand is killed, and
which I can't remember, was that the original one? Did he get shot or was he bombed?
It played out sort of like based on history. Like they did try to bomb him, and then like the bomb failed. So then his like car drove down the wrong street into a dead end. And like the guy that like shot then the guy was at a FK cafe and shot him. The events are similar, but then they throw in like the kind of like Kingsman flair, like oh like they like knocked Conrad like hits the bullet out like the grenade out of the way and stuff, and they're like Ralph Fiennes there, and then it was all conspiracy set up by the Shepherd, like. So, there's a lot of historical events that are like did happen or like are like similar, but they just throw like the Kingsman craziness on top of him. Like, oh, it's all a conspiracy. All these villains are working together. Like, there's a secret group doing espionage.
So the thing I was surprised was the twist almost at like the third act, which was shocking, but I appreciate it. I appreciate the whole like
spoilers for the Kingsman, but
yeah. So yeah, basically Conrad is taken out of the movie, and you really realize that the movie is just about the dad, Orlando Oxford.
Yeah, that was like pretty shocking. I was like, wait, this killed, like, I thought he was the main character. Like, this shot him in the head, he's dead. Like, I thought that was gonna be like a fake out, or that was like Ralph Fiennes' nightmare or something, and then Ralph Fiennes' nightmare, and then it turned out to be not true. But it's like, nope, that happens. He got shot in the head and he's dead.
Yeah, that was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So then,
did you think, so when I was watching it like a couple weeks ago, like I was convinced that just because based on the voice, I was convinced the Shepherd was gonna be like Ewan McGregor.
Ewan McGregor. I did too, and I was like, was he the surprise thing?
Because they're doing so much of like he's always in shadows, he's always in, and like he like I feel like Ewan McGregor has done like a Scottish accent before, or like he is Scottish or something. Like it's gonna be like the big reveal, right? It's like this is Ewan McGregor, that's like the big like surprise casting, and then it's like no, it's Matthew Good. He's just like
but with that actual Matthew Good Scottish accent, I couldn't tell.
Yeah.
Either way, it was interesting twist, but I kind of forgot about him. Like, there's so much
special
attack with the Conrad part where they go back and just like, oh yeah, it's this guy. It's just this guy that no one did any background check on, that he was the villain.
This like random character who's been in the background for like most, like, or just like been like do, like just doing like very small things at the back, like to the side for the whole movie, is like the big villain.
Yeah, that was fine, but it was kind of weird, right? Where, like, why did he do it? His reasoning, his whole, was just because the English...
He wanted Scottish independence, I guess, and he wanted revenge against Britain for what they've done to Scotland, I guess, or something. So he's gonna like, plunge the entire world into war. And then the thing with, like, I don't know, like, I'm not sure. Are they setting up like a sequel to this one where it's gonna be like a World War II, like it's the Kingsman, or like
spy thing?
Because
they weren't like a spy. They were just assassins at the end of the movie.
Oh, when Ralph Fiennes is like, we gotta go. Like when they go and then just like, we're just gonna go kill this guy. Like,
yeah, it wasn't spying at that point. Even though there was a spy part, Rasputin. Which I was not ready for how like homoerotic it got with that. That caught me off guard
quick. Everything with Rasputin was like so ridiculously over the top. like
just I appreciate the scene. It was just jarring.
Like, yeah, Rasputin is like a goddamn cartoon character in this movie. Like he felt like he came from like Kingsman 2 or something, would like he would be like it, like right at home in like an Elton John scene or something, like that crazy ending of like Kingsman 2. But like the Kingsman, like, it still has like some of the fun craziness, but this one like definitely has more of like a serious tone than the other
Kingsman. Okay, here's the thing though about the Rasputin part. So Rasputin feels like Orlando with his tongue.
Yes.
Okay. So magic is real? His magic is real?
So, yeah, somehow, yeah, somehow he, like, yeah, he heals his bullet wounds so that, like, Ralph Fiennes can, like, walk, because he's had a limp for, like, up to this point. Then it's like, oh, Rasputin, like, healed me with, like, his crazy magic, I guess, or something.
So some of his magic is real? The rest of it is just bullshit?
Or he just is like has like a very effective like massaging like licking technique or something, whatever he's doing. He got the blood flowing again to that leg.
And then it was like great. It just seemed weird, and it was
like
right?
cold, it involved like cold water and
so. That was kind of jarring because I don't know why he did it in the first place. Like, why did Rasputin heal the leg if he knew this was a trap?
I don't know. He's a lunatic. He's just a crazy lunatic.
So that's why I'm kind of like, all right, that was different.
Yeah.
But it seemed like it backfired on Rasputin. Like, why would you do this? Like, what, to impress this dude you're about to kill?
Yeah.
That's why I was kind of confused. Other than that, I enjoyed, like, all the minor casting. Like, all the trainers, like, Polly and Shola. They were fun. I mean, the romance between Gemma Arlington and Ralph Fiennes, it took a bit, but it was there. I do enjoy, like, her trying to be, like, a mom, but then it's, like, weird that she's in love with Ralph Fiennes, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I thought it would be, like, this sort of charming thing, not like she's romantically interested. And I really didn't know my history, where I just totally forgot that, like... Charles Dance's character, Kitchener, like, was gonna die. I was like, oh, is it gonna be Kitchener? Is he the villain or something?
Yeah, I mean, that's another history thing they threw into, like, the Kingsman universe, because, like, yeah, like, that, the whole thing, like, yeah, the HMS Hampshire was an actual ship, he was on it, it got hit by a German mine, or, like, yeah, it was a German mine in real life, but then in the movie it's like it was a torpedo, but he was on the Hampshire, it did blow up, like there was like also like the whole thing with like that telegram that got sent to when Germany sends like the telegram to Mexico to like be like, hey Mexico, you want to fight with America for us, like
that happened,
that was an actual thing, the Zimmerman telegram. I don't think there was a like porno film with Wilson
the Mahari, that they had to recover. Yeah, yeah. That was different.
It's also weird too, like the Kingsman group, like it's like the actual like Kings when they officially form Kingsman. It's weird that like, King George is like a Kingsman, because aren't they trying to be like set like independent from like anything, and but they have a King George as like a member.
And he's just in the room. Just
that
was bizarre. I was like, oh, okay. I do like that the all the kings were basically cousins. They all played by the same actor.
Yeah.
That was kind of cool. Mm-hmm.
And I do wonder, because there's definitely like the mid-credit scene is like setting up like a sequel maybe, but then I wonder if they're going to like come back to like this, like because they're doing Kingsman 3. That's the next movie, I believe, in like the Kingsman universe. So like, are they gonna like come back to this idea of like there's like this like cabal behind everything,
like the next Shepherd group,
like it's gonna be it's like their Spectre, like they're gonna pull like they're gonna be like, oh, all the other villains like Samuel L. Jackson and Julianne Moore were part of Shepherd's group. Now it's like the ultimate. They're gonna pull a Spectre or something.
I wouldn't mind that. That'd be kind of cool. Where it's like you definitely need a good opposing group that the Kingsmen needs to fight all the time. But I feel like they should have kind of brought that up in the first thing, even though this is like a new idea. The the thing that I can't figure out was like you can just become a shepherd if you just want to, like that, it just, that was weird. You know, where it's like, well, I'm the shepherd. It's like, all right. And then now it's like, well, I'm the new shepherd. Okay, so you inherit the title and the power, and I guess in all the connections? Mm-hmm. And at the end, where, like, basically Baron Zemoff just becomes Baron Zemoff.
Yeah, he's just, like, yeah, Daniel Brühl is just literally just Zemo in this movie. Like, he's just like, I'm just doing my Baron Zemo thing.
Actually, another fun thing. So when I was watching the movie, I thought that crutch or cane or whatever, like the shepherd's tool.
Yeah.
I thought that was just a J. Like an upside down J, and I was like, oh, okay, what's going on with this? And it's like, oh, the shepherd. I was like, oh, okay, he is a shepherd. I didn't get that like the first time I saw it. So,
but yeah,
that kind of threw me off.
Yeah, but yeah, fun entry in the Kingsman series, and then definitely interested to see where they're going. Because like, yeah, there's supposed to be like a third like Taron Egerton Kingsman movie, I think, coming in the future here. So, and then it seems like they're kind of like implying they're going to do like another sort of like prequel movie maybe, but then maybe they're just going to like have it like have something like tie into like whatever the new Kingsman movie is going to be.
I thought they were going to do like a Kingsman 3 and they showed like a teaser image of a young Michael Caine, or did I just have like a fever dream about that?
Well, yeah. There's definitely going to be some sort of like third present day Kingsman movie, like with like Taron Egerton and Colin Firth and everyone back. So, this is the one they did like in the meantime, like before that one, I guess. So, and yeah, there's not really any. I don't think there's any, like any info about like what this like third, the, like the new third like Kingsman movie is gonna be. Well, I guess this was the third. It should be the fourth one, but like the third, like of like the like the, of like the Eggsy trilogy.
So anyway, yeah, I enjoyed it. It was fun. It was definitely could have played up more on the spy thing, but it really was just like an origin story of this family and then how the organization, its principles were about, because it was all about non-confrontational. But I feel like it also shouldn't be the Kingsman because it was actually just like maids and butlers.
Well, I guess Ralph Fiennes was like, he was like friends with the king, I guess, so.
But then his network of spies were the help.
Yeah. I don't know, and then, but it's all named after the suit store anyway. So it's like,
well, that's because they needed a cover.
Yeah.
So I understand that. That was fine.
So anything else, Chris, that you've been watching?
So on the train on watching just action movies with like the understanding of trying to be knocked out like pacifism at first before saying screw it and all the action you can.
Yeah.
I saw Nobody. Mm-hmm. Which is a movie about a retired hitman who becomes unretired because he just doesn't want to be pushed around anymore. And it's directed by the guys who did John Wick.
Well, it's Ilya Naishuller's director. He directed Hardcore Henry, and then Derek Kolstad, who like wrote John Wick, wrote Nobody.
And I really wish they were in the same world, but it's not. I think. I mean, you can say it is because it's just how comical the like casual violences of just, oh yeah, no, that's just a thing that happens if, you know, we can avoid it. So the movie is about a guy who is like a nobody in the sense where he's not going anywhere. He's trying to stick his head down. He's trying to do the best he can and provide for his family. And his wife knows about a secret. Like, his kids sort of, but they don't know the full extent of what he is. So, yeah, his name is Bob Odenkirk, plays Hutch Mansell. He's just like a... he's technically like a former assassin. Well, yeah, he's a former assassin for all the big spy agencies in America. And he's just like... He is like a John Wick, where... If you know his past and you know like his work, he's like feared. And yeah,
he basically like whenever like one of the agencies has like someone they need to kill, like they like have him like track them down and kill them.
Yeah, like, but it doesn't explain how he's so good at take down armies, but he's good at like his job, and that's like the mystery of it. But I like that. It's nice and clean without trying to be like imagining Bob Odenkirk.
Well, it definitely has like a lot of that John Wick, like there's like a lot of like stuff where it's just like, oh, you need to go see like the barber, or it's like, or like he's an auditor.
There's
it's
code names, and then there's that whole like, that's what I'm saying. It's cool about how casual it is, but then it's like, huh, how does the economy work? But there's no bullshit like assassin coin. There's no like, you know, assassin's code of hunting and stuff. It's very clean in that sense, you know. But there is this other bizarre story which they don't get into, is that Hutch's his brother is played by RZA.
Yeah,
and he just goes off the grid for some reason. Like he's an underground guy. He doesn't really call by phone. He contacts by like CB radio. Like,
and their dad is Christopher Lloyd.
That part is I get their family dynamic. It's pretty cool, like how they're all sort of in that not criminal world, but just like spy game, action game. Because
yeah,
Lloyd is a retired FBI agent, but seems like he was a goddamn assassin too. Before I go any further, did you see Nobody, Zach?
Yeah, I saw it like a while ago. Yeah.
Ah, okay. But yeah, man, I like this setup. I like the premise. It really brings that, like, okay, he got to the point where he was just looking for a reason to just explode. Mm-hmm. And it could have been any event that triggered it. I thought the house event was going to do it, but it wasn't. Like, I thought it was going to be so more complicated than that, where it's like a house burglary, then it's connected to something else. But it wasn't. It was just by accident. And then he takes the bus.
Well, I like how, like, yeah, it's like, it's super, it's, like his thing is like simple. He just want to like get like find the people that like broke into his house, and then like he gets fighting the fight with the guys in the bus. But then I love how like it crazy gets, where it's just like the guys in the bus were like Russian mobsters, and then it's like they think he's after like they're like huge like money cat. Like it's like the money that like the entire like Russian mob, like it's like all the wealthy Russian mob is like they think he's like after that, and then. So it's just like this like crazy escalating. It's like it's almost like a Coen Brothers kind of thing, where it's just like it just keeps escalating like to like crazy levels.
Yep, I do enjoy that. That was cool. The thing about the villain though is that he's kind of like ridiculous. You know, like
yeah, he was
the
he was the bad guy in Hardcore Henry too.
Ah, okay, so he's just more of that, more of this actor just being the crazy Russian dude.
Mm-hmm. Although definitely not as crazy as like Hardcore Henry, because I think in Hardcore Henry he had I think at the end of that movie he had like superpowers or something, or like I think he was like levitating and like flying, like he basically became like M. Bison or something in Hardcore Henry, where he's just like flying around fighting Hardcore Henry.
Yeah.
Did you ever see that one, Chris? Did you ever see Hardcore Henry?
I have not. I've seen bits, but not all the way through. Like,
Yeah, definitely check that one out at some point too. That was a pretty crazy, awesome movie. It's like Crank, but you're like inside Jason Statham's head the entire time, basically.
So the other thing about that ending, though, fight was cool. The like almost Home Alone, just set up with all the traps. I did not expect how much traps this was gonna take, like this death room. So that was interesting. But I also didn't understand like how like Christopher Lloyd and the and Riz just sort of like knew about the traps. I feel like if they were there helping setting up, that would have been one thing about how they know how the traps work. But if you go in that place trying to help, there's so many things like I'd just be like, I'm not shooting anything. I'm standing in this corner shooting out. You know what I mean? Like it was like very time trapped. You have to like trigger with like a gunshot, or you have to like stand in a certain position and deploy so you don't just like hit your own friend or family. You know what I mean? It just, that was different. But otherwise, that was fine. Like, that was my nitpick about death traps is that. Yeah, and then I haven't seen anything else besides that this week. What about you, Zach?
Okay. Well, I saw a variety of things. So I got from Netflix, I got Excalibur, the 80s fantasy classic, from John Borman, who also brought us like Zardoz and Exorcist 2 and Deliverance. But yeah, this is a King Arthur movie. It came up a lot last year because people were like basically saying if you saw The Green Knight, like you should watch Excalibur because Excalibur is like definitely kind of like inspiration probably for it, or like one of the inspirations for The Green Knight. And yeah, it's also like King Arthur, it's obviously King Arthur and a lot of visual similarities probably. But yeah, Excalibur, crazy, crazy movie. They definitely try to like, I think that they try to cram a lot into it. They try to cram however many pages, like this, like, whatever adaptation of King Arthur they were like going off of. It's just like, it's like 8 books or something. And they try to cram it into like a just under 3-hour movie. And the crazy part is like it starts out and it's like it, like the pacing is just like for like the first like half is like fairly like standard, like it's like it's just, it, you know, it's following Arthur is like a, like when he pulls the stone, like Excalibur out of the stone, and like his kind of rise to like building Camelot and everything. But then at a certain point, when I think around the time when like Guinevere and Lancelot like have their affair, it, like the movie just goes off. Like I feel like it feels like someone was just like, we have like 500 pages of story left to like tell. So it's just like, because like after that point, just like they just like ramp through like plot points like crazy. Like the second half of this movie is just, like, it's just like plot point, like it's like accelerated rate of just like. And this happens. Like, they, like, cause it's like this normal pacing, and like all of a sudden it's like, oh, Merlin's trapped in a crystal. Morgana like takes over, is taking over the kingdom. They gotta go find the Holy Grail. Like,
wow. I forgot what happens. Like, I've seen this movie like one time.
Yeah, it's.
I was a kid.
It's just like the last half of this movie is just like crazy of just like. Things happening like all like a crazy pace and like with no explanations, and just like it's just like we gotta rush through this like end of this we gotta rush the end of the story because it feels like they should have had like a part one or part two or something, because it's just like there's so much stuff that happens in the second half. And it's like the whole thing with like Morgana like puts Merlin in like a crystal somehow, and it's, that whole scene is like insane, and like it's like not clear how anything's happening, and then has like the like has her son Mordred, who's like an incestuous child with Arthur, because Morgana and Arthur are brother and sister. And then the whole quest for the Grail, where it's like this is this crazy montage of like Percival like searching for the Grail, and then like at one point it's just like, I've been searching for the Grail for 10 years, and it's like, it's been 10 years, what? But yeah, so many people like huge like name like stars like got their like, this is like one of their first movies, so it's like, I mean, you got like Patrick Stewart, like this is like one of his first movies, like Liam Neeson, Gabriel Byrne, Ciaran Hinds, Helen Mirren. And then Nicole Williamson, like he plays Merlin. He like is probably one of the best characters in the whole movie. Like he definitely has like Alec Guinness Obi-Wan vibes, where he's just like he's playing the role in like similar to that, where he's just kind of like you know, like talks in riddles sometimes, like it, like is like kind of like sometimes like is like sometimes serious, but like a lot of times he's like, it's like he switches from like being serious to like being like a like just like joking around, but like almost like acting like he's drunk or something at times. And it's like there's like weird comedy bits where like he's like, oh no, I fell into the water, oh no, I tripped and fell into water. But like another big thing with this is like also just like the set design and like the like costuming and everything is like so like over the top and crazy, and like Camelot is like literally made of silver, and like everyone's armor is like super shiny all the time, and like there's always like green like lights all like for like magic, or like Excalibur's like always glowing green, or like just, and also the costumes and like how like Camelot looks and everything. So it's a interesting cool fantasy movie if you want like an abridged or like a condensed version of like the full King Arthur story, because it goes from like King Arthur's birth to like his like death. You get the entire thing in like 2.5 hours, even though some of it is like very rushed at the end, but you get like all the big story beats of the King Arthur like legend. So
I mean, everyone just remembers his marriage, and then like his finding the sword, his marriage, his affair, and then his death. Like his like when he dies in battle, I think, in some of the versions, right?
He fights his like nephew son, Mordred, and then
Mordred's his nephew son in this version.
Yeah. And
is Morgana's his sister in this version?
Yes. Because Arthur's father Uther had Merlin like make him look like this other lord Cornwall, like he wanted to look like him so that he'd like sleep with like Cornwall's wife, because he's like lusting after
in love
her.
With the wife. Yeah, that happened. Yeah. That also happened in like the Merlin TV show.
Yeah. But then like Merlin kind of like makes this deal of like, well, I'll do that, but then I get what issues from your lust, and which is Arthur. So then like Merlin takes Arthur when he's a baby, and like I'm gonna trade him to be the true king, or like make sure like he like is away from you and becomes the true king or whatever. So but yeah, if you've never seen Excalibur, check it out. It's very, very stylish, very you can see a lot of like very famous people in like super early roles. some crazy violence at times, like a lot of people get their arms cut off and stuff. So I'm not sure if it's streaming where I got it on a disc from Netflix, but yeah, you can rent it if you like. It's on like Google. It's on all the places. It's on Prime Video, and if you want to like, you have to pay to rent it, but like it's available at places. So, and then I saw Shadow in the Cloud, which came out last year, I think last January. And main reason I watched it is because there was a How This Get Made episode about it a couple weeks ago. So it was one of those I wanted to check out the movie before I actually listened to the episode, because I had heard about this movie and I had wanted to see what it was, but I just never got around to seeing it. And then it was like, oh, How This Get Made did it, so I'll finally watch it. And it's also on Hulu now, or like I think it was recently on Hulu. But this is a World War II horror movie, and it stars, it's Chloe Grace Moretz stars in it, and she is a flight officer who comes on board a B-17 that's on a flight from New Zealand to Samoa, and she has a package with her. She has to deliver the package, the crew is like, oh, the crew is like over the top, like misogynist. They're just like, we gotta fly with a dame, like stick her in the gun barrel, like the gun turret, so she's out of the way, like. But basically, she's on board the plane, and then a gremlin shows up and is like tearing apart the planes. So then like she has to like convince the rest of the, like all these like misogynist crew member guys, like, and there's actually a gremlin running around. But then also later they get attacked by like Japanese fighter pilots, so it's like Japanese fighter pilots are attacking them, plus like a gremlin's like running around ripping apart the plane and like causing damage. And the interesting slash weird thing about this movie for like the first half of it, and it seems like when it, like, you think it's gonna be the whole movie, but it eventually it's not the movie. But like, it seems like it's like a one location movie where like, after like the first like couple minutes, like they stick like Chloe Grace Moretz in like this like the bottom like ball turret. If you've ever seen like a B-17 bomber, it's like the bottom like gun turret. It's like a ball. It's like sticks out of the bottom. Yep. So they stick her in there, and then for like the first half of the movie, that you're just in that ball turret with Chloe Grace Moretz, and you only hear the other guys over the radio. So I'm just like, is this like buried or something? Is this the whole movie just like Chloe Grace Moretz is like stuck in this turret for like the entire movie? And I mean, eventually she gets out. So I mean, it's not the whole movie, but it's like a good chunk of this movie is just like you're like in this like turret with like Chloe Grace Moretz for like an hour or so probably. And then you just hear like the other guys over the radio. And then like the gremlin's like she sees the gremlin on the wing, and then like the gremlin's like attacking her turret. And then she's like fights off one of the planes, like Japanese planes with the turret. But then she eventually gets out, and then you find out like what her like package that she brought on board is. So like, there's like a twist with that. I thought it was okay. Like, I thought it was like a decent, like B, kind of schlocky B movie kind of thing. The gremlin looks pretty cool. Like, it's a cool like creature design, even though it's all CG, but it's almost like it has a cross between like a monkey and a bat kind of, because it has like wings and has like a monkey like a prehensile tail and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so it's definitely not as good as like Overlord or something, or like some of the other like World War II horror movies that come out. It's been kind of this like little like subgenre. Like there's been a couple of movies like recently that have been like World War II mashup horror movies, but
well, it's like not over the top because it's like in a plane in the air, more like a Twilight Zone episode with more World War II background stuff, right?
It gets over the top. Like there's at a certain point like Chloe Grace Moretz is like climbing, like while the plane is like engaging in dogfights with like Japanese plane, she's climbing on the outside of the plane trying to like get this package back. So it's so like you know, they're like 10,000 feet in the air, and she's like hanging off the bottom of the plane, like climbing around on the stuff. And then there's like one point where she like falls off the plane, but then a Japanese plane explodes under her, and it forces her back, like the explosion forces her back into the plane. And then she, eventually she has to fight the gremlin like one on one. And it's like fist fighting this gremlin. So there's obviously some like crazy like weird like B kind of schlocky B movie stuff in it. So but yeah, I thought it was fine. So if you're like it's on Hulu if you want to check it out. Or if you haven't listened to that How Does It Made episode yet, and you want to like watch the movie before you listen to that, you can check it out as well. They spent a lot of time like trying to like figure out how many gremlins there were. That was like their main thing for the episode. It was like, how many gremlins were there in the plane? And it's like, I think there's one, but they were like debating like the whole episode. I was like, is there three? Is there more than one gremlin? But yeah, so the last thing I watched, and I saw all three episodes that came out actually today when we're recording this, of the new HBO Max show Our Flag Means Death.
Oh, that came out.
Yeah, so three episodes came out today. I think they're doing two episodes a week after this for the next couple weeks. I think it's going to be like 10 episodes or 9 episodes, something like that. Yeah, so it's the new Taika Waititi show. So he wrote, produced, and he's also co-starring in it as Blackbeard. But it stars Rhys Darby as Steed Bonnet, who is this like very pampered British aristocrat who's just like decided to be a pirate. Like he's like, I think it would be fun to be a pirate, and he just like becomes a pirate. And he gets a crew full of like wacky weirdos, and they're just in the, but then one of the big like jokes of it, like the whole, is like he is like you know, most of the other pirates are like using like torture and fear and like all like they're like to keep their crew in line, and like he's like giving them like a sauna and like a racquetball court, and like he's like having them like talk about their feelings, and so it's just like he's like paying them a like salary, which like, so it's like they have like no like incentive to work or do anything because he's like paying them to do nothing basically. So he's just like very like soft caring pirate captain who's just like wants his crew to like express their feelings and like work together, like be a family basically. Yeah. And then like the crew's like there's like the plot of the first episode is basically like the crew is like, even though like he's like doing all this stuff for them, like treat them like he's like, yeah, paying them and like doing all the stuff for them, like they still want to mutiny because like he's not really a pirate and they're not really doing pirate things. And then
is the dry comedy from What We Do in the Shadows still there?
It's not a mockumentary, so it's there's no one's like talking to camera at all. It definitely has that dry kind of like, dry humor where it's just like a lot of like it's like the conversations are like the funny part where it's, or like they're just like being like making like these like their like the observations and stuff or like just like the situations and stuff like there's a one of the first things that happens in the first episode is like they are like they find a ship they're gonna like attack to like like you know to raid to be like for like a for like their pirate raid, and it's like this like little like fishing boat with like two old guys in it, and they have nothing. So Rhys Darby's just like making this whole like big like thing of like, you're being attacked by Steed Bonnet the pirates, I'm coming aboard. And then like he's like, oh, what do you have? This plant, I'm taking this plant. Haha, I'll let you live today. And then like leaves. So he has like very like Michael Scott energy, I think. Like he's like very like he thinks he's like way better. He's like way better a pirate than he thinks he is, but like he has no idea what the hell he's doing. And then, I think it really picks up in like the third episode is like it gets stronger as it goes. I think the third episode is like probably definitely the strongest episode so far, because you get a lot of the other like guest stars. You get like Leslie Jones and like Fred Armisen and Taika shows up as Blackbeard in that episode. So I think it definitely gets stronger as it goes on. So I'm definitely gonna keep checking it out. I don't think it's as good as What We Do in the Shadows. Like what we do in the Shadows, is one of my favorite shows of all time. Like this is funny, but it's not like it's not anywhere close to like What We Do in the Shadows right now. Maybe hopefully it'll get there. Maybe, but like there's a lot of like I get a lot of chuckles. I don't get a lot of like dying laughing from when I watch What We Do in the Shadows.
Okay, so it's like, but it's funny but not hilarious.
Yeah, but yeah, the cast is fun. There's a lot of like funny. There's like a lot of fun side characters. There's a great guest bit in like the first couple episodes from Rory Kinnear, who plays like this like British like officer that is like a that Rhys Darby like went to school with, and he was like he was basically like his bully, and then like, he's still bullying him as this British naval officer. And then something happens with him that's like ridiculous and crazy. And then Hodor, like Christian Narn, is like one of Rhys Darby's pirate crew members, and a bunch of other just like character actors are like Australian or like New Zealand comedy guys or like his crew members basically. So there's a lot of funny banter between all of them, which is like them like just like. There's like one guy like Black Pete like is like he is like trying to convince them all that like he was like Blackbeard's like right hand man, and he's like telling all these like over the top stories like how he like was like fighting alongside Blackbeard, and like everyone's just like, you didn't fight with Blackbeard. but Rhys Darby's just like eating it up, just like, oh really, you fight with Blackbeard? And then like, yeah, and like they go to like, it's like the third episode is like they go to like the pirate like island, the pirate republic, where like all the pirates, it's like sort of like Tortuga or something from like Pirates of the Caribbean, but it's just this big like pirate marketplace and like bars and everything. And then like they're trying to, they managed to capture like a British officer, and so they're trying to sell him for ransom. So like Rhys Darby's just like walking through the street something like mad for sale, and then everyone thinks he's like a prostitute, like a hook, or like a pip or something. He's like trying to sell himself or sell like this guy. It's just like, oh, I'll give you. So do you guys? Are you selling all three of you guys, or do you guys watch? Or
is like the first episode that all happens, or they kind of break up each little skit in each focus?
It's like each episode's like half an hour long, and yeah,
I'm surprised. I thought it'd be like an hour.
No, yeah, it's a quick like, it's like a half hour sitcom. And yeah, it's gonna be Wikipedia says six episodes. I thought I saw maybe more on like some other place, but yeah, I guess at least six episodes, and they're gonna. I think it's like two or three a week for next couple weeks here. So yeah, I'm gonna keep watching it. Like it's definitely funny. It's not like as funny as What We Do in Shadows, but like it's fun. It's definitely fun to see Rhys Darby be like get the spotlight, because like he's been great in everything else he's been in. So it's like fun to have it. He gets a show like that he's the star of. So yeah, that's on HBO Max. You can check that out over there. And that's it for me this week, so we can wrap things up. Definitely head over to the site. We've got all of our regular stuff up there. We got a Gamebox 2.0. You can check out what we played for games, video games and board games or tabletop games for February. And obviously, come back next week where we talk about all about the Batman, because obviously we're both going to see it, and we'll talk about it next week, probably full spoiler talk. And I think we're going to watch a past Batman movie for our commentary this month, so definitely check out come back later this month for some sort of Batman commentary. And yeah, so for Chris, I am Zach, and we will see you next week.
For more Everything Action, head to www.everythingaction.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at EVAction, on Facebook by searching for Everything Action, and follow us on Instagram at everything.action. You can also subscribe and get more episodes on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify.